Last August, UTAS predicted you'll never get promoted to League One playing Greg Taylor. Why wouldn't you back our predictions for 21-22? Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand season preview.
What the fucking you?
Hello, and a very warm welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jordan Warland, and today is the big one. It's our 21-22 season preview. How the hell are we going to do in League One? Will we survive? Will we score goals? Who will be the hero? Who will be the villain? To fully analyse all these big talking points, I need the best panellists UTAS have to offer. Unfortunately, both Owen and Swindle were unavailable, so I'm stuck with Tom and Julian. Talking of reserves, captain of the B team, welcome, Brigadier Julian Roberts.
Jordan, when pessimism comes knocking, I answer. When you asked me if I could join the pre-season preview pod to preview an imminent relegation for United, I couldn't say no. So thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure to be back.
Pleasure to have you. I was gonna start by asking how you found this week, because I know you've spent a lot of time listening to other pods, previewing the season, reading blogs, and so on. Keep it high level, but what are your conclusions and findings from what everyone else thinks?
Well, I think everyone is absolutely wrong, and all of their knowledge that they claim to have gained over the years, and very extensive League One statistical analysis, I think is absolute bollocks, to be honest with you. I think I've become very bitter reading all these previews. So we'll save that for later.
Well, I was going to say, I don't want to give away too many spoilers for later, but we are occasionally accused of being too negative on this pod. And all I can say to that is just wait till part two and Julian's prediction for how the season is going to pan out for United. And then do your review of the pod of if we're too negative or not. Talking of negative, welcome, Tom Walker.
Good to be back. I feel like I've been really positive for the last sort of 12 months. So I'm really looking forward to addressing the balance, so to speak. So yeah, let's get stuck in, shall we?
Well, you made a really good point off the air about all these sort of other podcasts that have been doing their League One predictions this week, about how some of them are trying to be a little bit too clever by not predicting the obvious sort of things like Morecambe being relegated and Sunderland being promoted.
Yeah, I think that can sometimes be the way. For example, you know, people sort of analysing the Football League, I think, like to make quite big statements and like to make predictions that, if they come true, will look very smart. So things like, you know, Ipswich not to want to run away with the league, things like that, because they're probably the biggest club in the league, and it might be seen as lazy to do otherwise. And they sort of go too far the other way sometimes, I think. So we've seen quite a lot of that, I think, kind of across the board. You know, people that are predicting us not to do very well, that's I'm not saying that they're wrong, but they're, you know, they're entitled to their opinions. But basically, what I'm saying is that we need some sort of biased, delusional optimism coming from our side to really balance it out. So that's kind of what we're here for, really. And hopefully, we can do it justice.
Well, before we get to that, Tom, we do just need to loop back to last week's pod, where you and I started the pod by having a good old laugh about how great Joe Ironside is at penalties. You didn't come to the Northampton game yesterday. However, I'm sure you've read that Joe Ironside, on cue, missed the penalty. Any doubts about his penalty taking, or are we still confident?
Well, the last player that took and missed several penalties for us ended up scoring 34 goals across the season. So hopefully that can be an indication that missing one or two is not necessarily a bad thing.
So Tom, you're saying nailed on Joe Ironside, 30 plus goals is what I've taken from that response. I like it.
Yeah, well, don't quote me on it. I haven't backed him, so maybe that's a bad sign. I would like to see Houlihan taking pens when he's on the pitch, to be honest. partly because of one of my predictions, partly because I think he'll score them as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a pre-season friendly. Maybe it was a test of how we can react to missing a penalty. Maybe it was all planned. That's how I'm going to spin that one.
I agree. Just give the ball to Houlihan even more than we already do. It's a fail-proof plan. Before we crack on with the preview, all three of us did go to the QPR game. So just very briefly, wanted to get everyone's take on Tuesday night at home to QPR. Didn't have a lot of the ball, did we? But for the most part, happy with what you saw or concerned?
It was a good friendly, wasn't it? Like the intensity for a pre-season friendly, I thought, was really, really, really high. It was a good game to watch. Let's not mess around here. That was a strong QPR side and we got absolutely pummeled, and it was written in the stars that it would be Harrison Dunk's mistake on his testimonial to give them the scoring. I mean, they hit the post three times, I think, over the course of the game, missed the penalty, which was obviously one of them. But Jordan, I think you made a good point the other day when we were talking about this, when you were saying the club have been very smart with how they've lined up these last two friendlies, the QPR game, as in the two types of games that we might come up against in League One, the QPR game being one where we'd have very little of the ball and we'd have to create chances on the break and find a way to create chances late on in the game when we're chasing a match, which we did do, and in a bizarre way, even though watching it we were very much under the cosh for a lot of it, I actually thought it was a really good test for what there is to come. And then the Northampton game being the opposite of a game where we're probably expected to get something in a relegation six-pointer by, well, the end of August, and try and, you know, get something out of the game like that. And it sounds like it didn't quite go so well yesterday.
Yesterday was fine. I didn't leave the ground, you know, panicked or worried. I did leave the ground thinking, God, that was forgettable. But let's chalk it up to sort of maybe not being fully ready for the season to go. But yeah, I definitely was stood there watching, especially second half against Northampton, thinking, this is, you know, and we'll touch on the league table in part two and how we see the division sort of splitting. But there's definitely going to be a split with like a top 12 to 14 clubs and a bottom, say, 8 clubs. And I did watch the game yesterday thinking this is a dress rehearsal for, say, playing one of those bottom 8 clubs, especially at home, where we're going to have a team who sort of see us as a way of getting points, and whether that be just getting the 1 point or maybe sort of nicking something 1-0. Did have that kind of vibe to it. You know, positives, we contained Northampton really well yesterday. Defensively, we're very strong. Negatives are we just didn't get the goal. The last sort of 15-20, we also went quite direct and quite long, and I think that was a sort of a dress rehearsal for should we be chasing a game, how we might sort of change the formation and go into it. So yeah, it was an interesting one while still being completely forgettable. Tom, did you have a good time at Harrison Dunk's testimonial on Tuesday?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was, yeah, like I think like Julian said, it was a good sort of intense game. I think the reaction to it was overall pretty negative across the board. But I think that point that Julian made there, just about the sort of contrast of going from a game like that to going to playing against Northampton, where we're expected to, if not win the game, certainly control certain elements of the game. That won't have happened by accident. I think that's something that Bonner alluded to when we played against Brentford at St. Neots, that you know, you have to be realistic. There's going to be a lot of games this season where we're not going to be controlling them. We're not going to have much of the ball, and you need to work on your shape out of possession, you know, as well as seeing what you can do with the ball. And look, let's be honest, against QPR, there were a few times where we did look pretty vulnerable, and that's obviously going to be a concern. But the fact that we were, you know, quite comprehensively dominated for pretty much all of that game, barring a decent sort of last 10 minutes, that's not really a concern to me at all. I think that will probably have been engineered to have played against a team like that in kind of exactly that way. very similar to the way that Southgate used the friendlies actually in the run-up to the Euros, just to bring another reference in there. But you know, I think there's that acceptance that there's going to be times where we are under spells of pressure and where we are in games, in situations, in games that you know, it looks like it might be getting away from us. And sort of how can we use our shape, how can we use our you know, structure and experience of that situation to kind of try and come through it. And then again, you know, similarly against Northampton, Jordan, you mentioned obviously while you were there, there were sort of times in the game where you felt maybe we were, you know, trying different things out within the game to see what was most effective. I think one of those being, I think last sort of half an hour, I think it was when Smith came on, obviously looking to go direct with the ball. Now, it's easy to look at that sort of within a preseason friendly as that's how we're trying to win that game, if that makes sense. Like looking at the game really as like an isolated sort of exercise almost, whereas clearly it's an opportunity to do something that you might not necessarily want to do in a game, but just see how it would work. So I think it's good that we've tried those things. I think there's been aspects of our play which have been really encouraging. I think one or two of the new signings have looked really, really good. And I think there's been aspects that have been a little bit concerning, but unfortunately that's just the way it's going to be, you know, going into a season with some of the sort of teams we're going to be coming up against on a pretty regular basis. So yeah, enjoyed Tuesday. Wasn't upset to have missed yesterday. Yeah, looking forward to the real stuff starting on Saturday.
I wonder how many pods we'll do this season with Tom dropping in an England Southgate reference. We're 2 for 2 so far, and we've not even started the season. Right, should we do some predicting? The way today's pod is going to work is hopefully a bit like this. This first part, we're going to look more specifically at players. And in the second part, we are going to look more specifically at formation, management, and the league table in general. We've got a couple of friends of the pod to help us out as we go. And yeah, we're going to start actually with Owen, who couldn't make today's recording. Basically, Owen is trapped in that classic weekend before the season starts, have to spend time with the missus. I think they've gone mountain biking or something. I hope you're having a lovely time, Owen, because from next week onwards, you're going to be in trouble because football is every Saturday. So yeah, let's listen to Owen's first prediction.
I don't think that Dimi Mitov will finish the season as our number one in goal. I think we'll replace him at some point during the season, whether that's permanently or with someone more likely in on loan.
Right, nice one, Owen. A bit bold there with his Mitov prediction. And I feel like we are returning once again to a topic that has basically been ongoing for at least two seasons already. Owen reckons Mitov is not going to finish the season as our number one choice. We are currently looking at goalkeepers. That is obvious from what Bon has been saying. The last two friendlies, obviously, we had a trialist on the bench. Do we think there's enough there, though, looking at this sort of extra option in the goalkeeping front to displace Mitov as our number one choice? What do we reckon, lads?
Probably haven't got the options at the club at the moment. As I said when we recorded last week, I would like us to bring in somebody who would be the number one. It sounds very much like we're kind of trying to do the opposite almost and bring someone in who can just kind of cover if needed. So the signs are there that they obviously back Mitov quite a lot. It feels like, again, like you said, Jordan, we're coming back to a conversation we've had time and time again, but I do think it's actually pretty relevant because there was a lot of chat last season about who should be number one. Should it be Mitov or should it be Burton? And if you're not sure that one of them is good enough to be a number one in League Two, that would concern me a little bit going into a season in League One where you think he's going to be tested quite a lot more or should be tested quite a lot more than obviously what he was last season. And it's probably going to be against strikers who you know, should be a level above, who should be able to finish chances better, who should be able to take chances earlier. So I think it's a position on the pitch which I wouldn't say I'm necessarily concerned about. You know, I'm concerned about other areas of the pitch, about our numbers there. It's more one that if there is room in the budget and we have the opportunity to do it, then I think we should absolutely be looking to upgrade there. it would be one that I'd like to just get ahead of the game on a little bit, to be honest, rather than waiting for January to come round and needing to go out and do something, because you never really want to be chopping and changing your goalkeeper. Obviously, you would like that to be the sort of solid part of the pitch, the one that you can really rely on. And, you know, if the club feel that that's to be Mitov, then that's something that they're going to have to live and sort of stand by. So, yeah, we'll see. I would probably go along with Owen there, to be honest. I would probably agree that maybe come the end of the season, we might see somebody else playing in goal, but who that's going to be and how it's going to play out, I don't really know.
Well, word on the street is that the trialist is Jake Eastwood, who is at Sheffield United, but it's been told he can move on. He played, I think, 7 or 8 games for Grimsby last season on loan. I'm not sure that's the right profile of goalkeeper we should be looking for. It looks like we're falling back into that, having sort of two very similar goalkeepers. Julian, your thoughts on this one?
I think it's actually a really good prediction. Has anyone thought maybe he meant it the other way around? That Mitov's going to have such a brilliant first half
in January or something?
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think so.
I just know how negative Owen is. So no, I don't think he meant that.
No, the question I was going to ask was, does Mitov worry you, either of you, in the sense of howlers that he has a potential to make? Or is it more just a general standard? Do you know what I mean? Is it more big goalkeeping gaffes that worry you with him? Or because I'm thinking back to a game at the start of 2 seasons ago, which I think was Cheltenham at home on a Tuesday. It could have been Exeter, actually, when he let that one through his legs. But I can't think of many other right off the top of my head where he's properly dropped one. Is it more of a general standard issue, do you think?
Yeah, I think you make a good point, because the season where we had Calderwood in charge and then Bonner sort of for the last part of it, obviously Bonner went with Burton at the end of that season, didn't he? And I think Mitov was guilty for letting in some soft goals. And I'm remembering those horrible 4-0 back-to-back defeats. I think a couple of them were quite soft. I guess you can make an argument that the defence and the defensive midfield in front of him didn't really help. So perhaps he is a little bit behind in his development because he missed a good chunk of the second half of last season. I don't know. I'm kind of jinxed there, aren't I, by saying I don't think he has many howlers in him. And I think he's a good shot stopper. So hopefully he will be all right against that better quality of finisher that Tom was sort of hinting at. I think a lot depends on how much help he gets from those in front of him as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy to be called out at the end of the season if I'm completely wrong. And, you know, next season's going to, or this, you know, upcoming season's going to be one where a lot of the players that were very good last year might find themselves in difficult situations quite a lot. So if Mitov turns out to not be good enough for this level, he probably won't be the only one. So it's not like we're going to be scapegoating him and putting all the blame on him. Hopefully we can see how things go. But it's just, yeah, I think more just a general prediction. You know, I remember the ones that you're referring to there, Julian, the sort of moments. I think against... I think it was Exeter at home. I think there was like 2 within a space of like 5 minutes just like went through his legs. That was obviously 2 years ago now. So, you know, he's still, you know, still fairly young, been handed a new contract in the meantime. So, you know, his development seems to be going pretty well. And obviously he's rated by someone like Mark Bunn, who, you know, has been there and done it at the highest level as a goalkeeper. So, you know, you'd have to trust in what he's saying. So, yeah, we'll see. But like I say, I think it's just a general overriding feeling, really. And that's one that might turn out to be absolutely wrong. And I hope so. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We do have an end of season future pod planned where we're going to listen back to this and go through everything that was said in this pod and call people out on it. So don't you worry, Tom. That calling out will definitely happen. Let's stick at the back of the pitch and move to Julian for our next 21-22 prediction, because you have one related to our centre-back area.
Well, I wanted to do one at the back of the pitch. I was thinking about something to do with Brigadier Williams at right-back, but I haven't seen enough of him to make any sort of prediction between him and Noyle, and also, the standard's very different, so I don't want to do something there. And Lloyd Jones is someone who I think even on the couple of occasions, just the once I've seen him this season, he seems like a really, really, really decent acquisition. And you spoke about him last week. And I think he will become a really, really important part of this team and a real fan's favourite. So the prediction I've got is that Jones is going to be our highest scoring defender, which isn't really maybe the boldest of claims, but Bon has talked about how he wants to spread the goals around the team a bit more. And oh, he's got an obvious aerial threat, Jones. So I have a feeling we'll see a few goals from set pieces from Jones. But in general, I just think he's going to be such an important player for us at the back. And that's a prediction, really. So he'll be the highest scoring defender on one goal, is my prediction, by the way.
Well, I was literally just going to say that. I think it's a smart prediction, the way you've worded it, because I don't back the other defenders to score. I know, obviously, Iredale got quite a few last season, but I wonder if he might not be as attacking this season. It's a nod of agreement from me. I think, like you say, he's got that aerial threat. And the good news, the post-match interview from Bonner yesterday confirmed that taking him off was just a precaution and he's fine. There was a lot of panic seeing him hobble off and the realisation that actually the only other centre-back we've got is an untested youngster. I imagine we'll probably see some movement in the transfer market this week before the season starts, and centre-back is definitely something the club has said they're looking at. I don't think a new centre-back will replace Lloyd Jones. I think Lloyd Jones is our starter. I'm predicting good things for him this season. He had a good rep with Northampton. Tom, do you think if someone new comes in, it's Taylor that might get the cut?
Yeah, I don't think he'll get cut. I think as last season's captain, he's obviously going to be given the chance to, you know, prove that he's good enough, if he needs to prove anything to anyone at the club anymore, you know, given what he's done over the sort of last 8 or 9 years, how long he's been here now. I think it'll be one that's more added to, and it sounds like it's a real kind of football cliche, but one that's going to be added to really provide competition to those that are already there. I'd be surprised if, you know, barring any injuries or anything like that, if we went into Saturday with anything other than Jones and Taylor as our centre-backs. He's certainly going to be a bit of a goal threat because he's absolutely enormous. That was one of the first things that that struck me, I think. But I think they've been pretty clear that they want reinforcements there, and it might make them work a bit harder and a bit quicker to get someone, knowing how scared they would have been when he did have to come off, even if it was only a precaution. Seeing that, I think Digby ended up playing centre back for the rest of the game. So, you know, not only do you not want to be playing Digby at centre back, but you also don't want to be taking him out of his preferred position, where obviously he's such an important player for us. So, we'll bring someone else in. I would love to see us bring in Okadina again on loan. Not only because he's very good in centre back, but he also covers that right back slot. I think he's the captain of the under 23s at Spurs now, so I don't know how much chance he might have of getting in maybe a couple of the squads for maybe their cup games next season, but that'd be my ideal sort of signing, I think. We'll see what they do. I think they'll definitely bring someone in this week, so hopefully they're the right sort of personality as well. Because I think that's what Bonner said, that they've been really struggling with, to find the right characters to bring into the squad. So we'll see how it goes.
It's setting itself up to be Swindle, isn't it? Centre back, got character. God would be
a bit of experience.
God would be in big trouble.
How does everyone feel? Sorry, George. Sorry to interrupt. How do you feel about the back line in general, like cover at right and left back? Like, I know there's obviously, you just mentioned centre halves, but in general, do we feel that Lance Corporal Williams is a good addition on the right, and that we're going to be well stocked on the left with Duncan Iredale?
I thought you just said Duncan Iredale. I thought that was his full name. I was really confused there. I thought I'd missed the key bit of transfer business. I think we've got enough bodies, probably, especially if we can bring in a centre-back with a bit of versatility to maybe play on the right as well. Obviously, I'll be interested to see how much of a part Bennett has to play as well, because it seems like he's been fairly highly rated sort of throughout the pre-season. So there might be a point at which he comes in, but we'll see. I feel okay with it, to be honest. I think the two left backs have different qualities. I think Dunk will probably be more suited to what we're going to be doing more of, which is defending in League One. Idel's a really good option to have as well. Obviously provides, you know, decent quality going forward. I think something you can't underestimate with Williams, and I know there's been one or two comments here and there about what he looks like. Obviously, looks like compared to Noel, I should say. We've made a lot of comments about what he looks like. He looks just like a fighter pilot, as I think someone mentioned on the message board. So that's where the Lance Corporal thing is coming from. But I think you really can't underestimate, firstly, what a different role he's going to have in the team to what Noel had. So you're going to have to get used to the fact that, you know, he's probably not going to be spending all his time in the attacking third of the pitch. He might do, but that might lead to us getting torn apart a few times. But also just the experience he brings. I know that they've said, with a lot of the players they've brought in, they tried to look for League One experience, which is great. And they've done that. They've all played in League One, but to pretty limited extent. Williams is the only one with really a good level of sort of first team regular experience, but sort of under his belt. I think that's going to be really important in the squad. It's not something that we're going to see, obviously, as fans, not on a week-to-week basis, but it might just help one or two of those who we're not sure about to make the step up a bit better. So that's going to be really important as well. I just think he's another one of those who maybe we've been spoiled so much by Noel and his qualities at the back and going forward as well, that regardless of who we sign, it's always going to be a bit of a level down. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily a bad player or doing a bad job. I think it's just one that we'll get used to. And the fact that our fullbacks are going to stay a little bit further back rather than being, sort of almost like wingers, those days are gone, unfortunately, unless we really, really adapt well.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree there. I think I nearly went with a prediction for this pod around how many assists we would see from Williams at right back. And I decided to opt out of that one. But I think obviously the question, Julian, about numbers, I think centre back is obviously an area where we need to add some more in. I think the left side is more than adequate. It's the right side that I'm concerned about, not so much because we're sort of lacking numbers there, or I think that we'll be weak there. I'm actually more concerned that we won't sort of see that attacking kind of play coming from the right back that we've been used to over the last couple of years with Noel and Halliday. And the reason I don't think we'll see that is not a reflection on Williams himself. It's actually a reflection of who is in front of him. Obviously Lancaster being out injured is a big concern. Like, he was brought in, I think, to be the number one right-sided midfielder. And with him out injured, you've got Tracy and you've got Nibs as your options on the right-hand side. We saw Nibs playing there against Northampton yesterday. And it just seems a little bit makeshift trying to sort of fit him into the area, into that position. So I think Williams was being quite reserved on the basis that he knew the person in front of him probably wasn't going to offer the cover. So perhaps we might see someone on the right-hand side of midfield come in this week before the season kicks off. Let's stick with midfield and sort of the theme of assists, because Tom, your prediction centres around the man who was the king of assists last season, Mr. Wes Houlihan.
Yeah, it does indeed, but it's not about assists. I predict that Wes Houlihan will score home and away against Ipswich. The floor is all yours.
I'm just intrigued as to why you think we'll score at all against Ipswich. Can you talk us through your thinking here?
Yeah, it's really detailed and it's really insightful. It's because he used to play for Norwich and he did really well against Ipswich for Norwich, and therefore he'll do well against Ipswich for us. I don't know if you want any more to that or if that's enough detail for one pod.
Yeah, probably move
done.
On. I think
no, I think, not only do I think that may happen, I think there is a wider point out that I think he might be quite important in actually scoring goals as well this season. He's towards the sort of end of last season, he seems to be getting on the score sheet fairly regularly. And I hope that we might see that continued. Maybe he can get towards sort of 10 goals, maybe even one or two more. going into next season. And, you know, obviously we talked about Mullin leaving and the sort of gap that that's going to leave, and that we're going to try and replace it with goals from elsewhere within the team, which is fine and which is absolutely fair enough. I think he's got a really important part to play in that, not just in terms of setting them up, but actually scoring the goals as well. I would like to see him on penalties, so that'll obviously help with that. But, you know, we'll see who kind of takes them when we get them. But yeah, I think that's basically it, really. That I think he can be a really important goal scorer for us as well as setting them up. He's our best player. That responsibility is kind of on him now, so I'm intrigued to see how he does with it.
Do you think he will be better suited for League One than League Two, because those that we're playing in League One might not be as worried about our attacking outlets? He might have a little bit more time and space on the ball, or do you think his reputation from last season and obviously his career in the Championship and Premiership will make people more alert to him?
Yeah, I think his reputation sort of might precede him a little bit at this level. Last year there were times where it looked like he was just playing a different game. He was just, you know, people just couldn't get near him. He was just that bit quicker, even just in his mind, right? Like, he was just that one step ahead before the defender could even realise what position he needed to be in. I feel like the quality is obviously going to be higher, and they'll obviously pick him out as our biggest threat with Mullin gone as well. I would assume so anyway, especially in these early games. And he's obviously our biggest creative influence, and it's going to be interesting to see how Bonner sets up, and we'll go on to the formation. But you mentioned Lancaster there, Jord. It's going to be interesting to see, I mean, how often Wes plays, first question, because, I mean, you know, he's turning 40 this year, I think. And secondly, what we do when he doesn't play, because it was a bit of a problem at points last season, and we found ways to work around it. But it's going to be interesting to see how he sets up. I don't know if you've given that any thought. Like, well, first of all, how often do we think he's going to play?
If he stays fit, I can see him playing more games this season than last season, purely because we've got less midweek games, right? We're back to a more normal calendar.
Good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
But my worry is we've seen a lot in pre-season of sort of makeshift personnel going into like the number 10 role. Like Nibs yesterday against Northampton, Wes and Nibs were swapping between the middle and the right themselves. I can't feel confident going into League One with Harvey Nibs playing number 10. Just isn't going to work. I know obviously we've got people out injured and people to come back, but I think for me it just emphasises we're a few bodies down, and that's something that I think we need to address before the transfer window shuts.
Yeah, I think that is a good point, and I think that's something that has happened quite regularly throughout pre-season. I can accept that we're not going to be able to go into this season and compete with the Sunderlands, the Ipswiches, the Charltons, etc. for players. We're not shopping in the same market as them. Probably even smaller but more established League One teams like Oxford, for example. You know, if we're offering a two-year deal and Oxford are offering a two-year deal, they're going to go to Oxford every time. And that's something I accept. But what I find difficult to accept, and we talked, and I'm quite positive about the business that we have done, but I would be frustrated if we went into a season where right from the off, we were having to put, you know, square pegs in round holes, basically. That, to me, would be a real frustration. I wouldn't expect us to, you know, be adding, you know, to be spending loads of money, basically. I wouldn't expect us to be shit or busting it just yet. But I would like to see us at least fully prepared. And at the moment, if we're playing certain people in certain positions where they don't, you know, look comfortable, don't look like they necessarily belong there, a level up from last season, that's an immediate concern to me about the strength and depth of the squad. And, you know, fortunately, there's still a few weeks to go. We can still bring people in. I have a feeling it might take a humbling against an established League One team for that to actually really happen. So I'm not saying hopefully that comes, but I think that's the sort of thing that can sometimes be a catalyst for a bit of change. So hopefully that happens. Obviously, they've already mentioned they're looking into a centre-back. I think they mentioned they might look into a wide midfielder. We obviously Lancaster out injured, but I would like to see maybe one or two more than that as well. That might just be, you know, typical nerves of fans thinking we always need this and we always need that. But I do think on the evidence of what we've seen, that's a pretty reasonable claim. But yeah, we'll see what happens there. I have a feeling we'll be busier towards the end of the window than what we would have liked to have been, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that is a good place to stop for part one. Second half, we're going to talk about strikers, formation. We're going to kick off part two with a guest prediction.
I'm Greg Taylor. You're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, and I think the UTAS boys should cheer up.
Russ Greaves here, message board moderator and renowned Cambridge United author. My prediction for the season ahead is that Joe Ironside, aka Big Joe, will outscore friend to Hollywood stars Paul Mullin, despite playing two divisions higher and probably on 1/10 of the wage. And I'd go as far as to give Moneybags Mullin a 5-goal head start on that one. And Big Joe will still overtake him probably by Christmas and leave him in the dust by the end of the season. So that's what I'm going for.
Right. Welcome back to part two of Under the Abbey Stand, the 21-22 season preview. A big thank you to Russ for his prediction there. Russ is currently working on a book called 100 Things I Love About Cambridge United. Surely Joe Ironside has got an entry in that book. Let's talk about Ironside in general. I think he's going to be critical to our success this season. If preseason has taught us anything, it is that Bonner is shaping up to play one up top. How do we feel about that? Are we happy with just the one up top? Would we prefer a second striker alongside Ironside? And do we think Ironside can step up to League One? Tom, do you back Big Joe?
Yeah, of course. Of course I back Big Joe. It got forgotten, I think, last season in a lot of the hype around Mullin and Houlihan and Noyle and players like that. He actually had a really decent season himself. He didn't get lost, but you know what I mean. It wasn't the headline. You know, he comes off a pretty decent goal scoring record. I think he scored, was it 15 last year? 15, 16 goals. Obviously, he had that season behind him. I think at Kidderminster as well, where he scored 20-something as well. So, He knows where the back of the net is, and he's going to be a really important player. I don't know how many goals he'll score in League One. I think, like a few of the others, it might take a little while maybe to get up to speed with it, and you know, we'll just have to be patient while that happens. But I think more generally around the actual formation, the way we're going to set up, I think it's just sensible. You know, I know there's a lot of people that are going to be, oh, you know, 4-3-1, 4-4-1-1, whatever it is, you know, is negative, et cetera, et cetera. I just think it's the right way to be playing. It's the right way to be going into this season. And it allows us to get Wes into his best position. It allows us to pat the midfield a little bit more. And I think Joe Ironside can play up front on his own. I seem to remember he did it once against Salford at home. I think it was September maybe last year. But obviously at the time they were sort of touted as being the best team in the league, the sort of favourites to win the league or certainly go up. And, you know, with Joe Ironside up front, it really allowed us to do some of the things that we were best at. So I think it's fine. I think it's sensible again from Bonner, good management to acknowledge that we maybe can't be as free flowing, as attacking as we would like to be. And it allows us to get good players on the pitch while remaining solid. So I quite like it, to be honest. But I know there's going to be a lot of chat about how negative it is to only be playing one up front. And that's forgetting that the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid have been playing one up front for the last 15 years. But yeah, it doesn't matter. Why let facts get in the way of opinions, right?
I love it when you compare us to Barcelona and Liverpool and all these very, very similar teams to us in terms of size and quality.
Yeah, but like it's just an overriding point that the assumption is that because the formation has a one at the end of it, it must be negative. And that's just not the case. It's not how football works. It's not the way that you use that one, yeah, and the way that, you know, the midfield works. The fact of the matter is there are going to be a lot of games where we are going to play quite negatively next year. It would be stupid not to. We're not going to go away to Sunderland, away to Ipswich and try and match them up one for one. We'll get fucking battered. So let's try and do something that's going to stop that from happening. Maybe people are saying it's negative and they don't mean it as a bad thing, but that's certainly the way that the sort of narrative comes across. So yeah, we'll see how it goes, but I'm looking forward to it.
I think the recruitment that Bonner and co have done this summer has been quite smart in terms of if we need to mix it up and send a second person to play off our firing side, play a little bit higher, you've got the options. I think Wes can do it. Obviously, he loves being in the hole, but I think he could maybe creep a little bit further forward and play off Ironside. Shiloh Tracy, I think they have eyes on him playing more centrally as perhaps a backup emergency striker if needs be. And then you've got Sam Smith, who we talked about in the sort of the preseason catch-up pod about how this was a good piece of business. I, on the prediction front, don't actually think Smith will score more than 10 goals this season, which I know sounds a little bit negative, and it's not me trying to sort of belittle or moan about Smith. I think it's a good signing and I'm glad we've got him, but I just get the impression he's going to play on the right hand side, especially whilst Lancaster's out, a little bit more experienced than Tracy and Nibs, has played sort of wide right for other clubs. I think Cheltenham played him there as well. So I think that's how we will start the season. And like we saw against Northampton yesterday, if we're chasing the game or if we need to mix it up, you've got the option to sort of push him more central and play him next to Ironside. So, Julian, let's talk about goals. Who's going to score the most in the team? Ironside or Smith or Mullin even at Wrexham? Who do you think of the three is going to get the most?
Definitely not Mullin. I'm going to go with Russ on this. I reckon Ironside outscores him by one. Mullin scores five, Ironside scores six. I think Smith will score the most out of them two. But I think you're right. And I was going to make this point about him playing on the right-hand side, which there was a few games at the end of last season when I remember when me and Tom watching them together, and you noticed for the first 15 minutes of games, Mullin often started on the right-hand side and Ironside played centrally, and then we sort of adapted the formation, and it happened a couple of times. And I don't think he, from my memory, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he stuck with it for a whole game. But we did see that sort of shift in formation throughout games with one of the strikers playing much further to the right. And I think you're right, George. I think there'll be a lot of, especially games where, you know, maybe like we saw Nibs sort of playing that role yesterday, as you mentioned, right, swapping with Wes between that number 10 and the right-hand side. And I think maybe that's earmarked for a game that we might be looking to go and get points from or expected to get points from. That's the sort of role that Smith plays in that team. I just have a feeling that Ironside's going to be a proper provider this year. The strengths he has, when he came on against QPR, having seen him once play in the flesh, or maybe twice, I just sort of forgotten he throws himself about, and he's such a handful. It's such a cliche, isn't it, to say that a striker like that is a handful, but you sort of forget that he's not the biggest, most imposing figure on the pitch for that sort of role, right? For that, like, target man, wins every header, wins every flick on, and he doesn't look at first sight like that sort of player, but he's so, so good at it. And I think, like you say, Jord, that role of flicking on to wide players bombing forwards, or Wes going further forward, and I think that's where there'll be a lot of, he'll be providing a lot for things to happen around him. So I love Russ's prediction. I agree with him mainly because I think Mullin will be a massive flop at Wrexham, and I'm very salty about it still. But I do think that Smith will be our top goal scorer. That's not disagreeing with yours though, George. Sorry to go on, but like, I don't think we'll score lots of goals this season, first of all. I do also think we will spread them around the team more. But I think, if to answer your question, I'd say Smith.
Well, Lloyd-Jones is going to score loads, as we discussed in part one. I've got two follow-up questions for the pair of you. Number one, we've seen two formations over the last two games. Tuesday night against QPR was 4-3-3, so we had that extra third man in midfield. And then Saturday against Northampton was 4-2-3-1, so we played sort of more attacking-minded midfielders than, say, sort of your more central midfielders. Which of those two formations do you think will bring the most points returns for us? And then second question, with this one up top, which we're all in agreement we're going to do, are we concerned that we don't have a backup target man in the squad? You know, we saw Smith play up top on his own against QPR. He tried, but perhaps wasn't the most successful. Like, he's well built, but he's perhaps not built enough to be a target man. It's not his game. So what are your thoughts on those two questions, lads?
On the first one, something that I was thinking about And I'm gonna play a little Tom Walker card here and make another comparison to England, to Gareth Southgate's England. What a lot of pundits commented on Southgate doing so well with this England side is sort of getting rid of the concept of just having one best 11. You have a best 11 to play against that specific opposition, right? So examples of like Foden starting the tournament and then Saka being the sort of player that can be more impactful against certain opposition. So there's a best 11 for each game. And I think to answer your question, we'll see a lot of chopping and changing, I think, between our starting 11s, depending on who we're playing. And I think that 4-2-3-1, as mentioned with Smith playing as like a nominal right-hand side player, but getting very far forward, will be what is bookmarked as grabbing the most points against your Fleetwoods, your Gillinghams, your Wimbledons. So that's I think they're sort of that's what they're hoping. And yeah, with Smith up top, it's he works hard though, doesn't he, Smith? Like he really he puts the miles in, and it just doesn't seem quite so suited to his game, maybe. You're right. But I think I'll go for the 4-2-3-1 as something that would reap a few more points.
Tom, do you want another striker before the window shuts?
Yes, please.
Have you got
one?
Are you
trying to suggest? He's suggesting that Andy Dallas isn't good enough.
No,
but we have seen Dallas play in that sort of wide right role. We've seen both Dallas and Nibs in preseason trying to be shoehorned into the team somehow, and it is a worry that. Yeah, I think it's a worry that if we do that, it's going to sort of properly limit us on that right-hand side. And it means that we won't have that sort of attacking fullback play. And I wonder if, until we get that sorted, we might go 4-3-3. Just have, you know, Digby and then two of Adam May, Jensen Weir, who I've been really impressed with, or Liam O'Neill. That's just my if I'm going to edge my bets.
Yeah, I think something that football teams do really regularly now as well is they do work on different shapes in and out of possession. So, you know, we can obviously talk about one set formation, one set lineup, but it's probably going to be different within games depending on if we have the ball or not. I feel like, to be honest, I think the difference in the amount of points that we get from those two, it's going to be skewed a bit by the games that we play them in. I think 4-2-3-1 will get us more unexpected points, but I think that we will be more effective at home against crap teams, basically, with another strike on the pitch, just because it should potentially give us that sort of extra outlet. But we're obviously not going to be playing, or we probably won't be playing that against like Sunderland and going away to the Valley and, you know, your Portsmouths. And therefore, like, we're probably going to lose more of those games, but it's not going to be because of the system. It's probably going to be because we are playing against teams who are much better than we are. I wouldn't be surprised to see us always have two strikers on the pitch, or have two strikers on the pitch quite regularly, but there'll be long periods within the games where it looks like we're playing them out wide. And then once we get the ball, you might see the shape change a bit. I think Bonner's referred to that as well. And again, it just strikes me as a switched on move by a young, innovative coach.
Love it. Love it. All this talk of shape and formation sets me up to make my prediction that we didn't quite have time for in part one. 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, regardless, both of them tie into my prediction. And my prediction is all about the influence of Mr. James Brophy this season. New signing from Leyton Orient. I've been impressed with him in pre-season. My prediction, and I might be getting the terminology wrong here, so apologies in advance. My prediction is that Brophy will be involved in the most sort of chances and goals that come from the team. So not directly scoring them or getting the actual assist, but he'll be involved in the movement that leads to the goal. My reason for that, just from what I've seen on pre-season, is the left-hand side for United is our stronger side. Yesterday, Wes was looking to go left more than he was looking to go right. It ties into what we were saying about options on the right-hand side. Brophy has pace that I didn't realise. He was really, really quick yesterday, and that caused Northampton problems. It led to the penalty. He carries the ball. He crosses the ball. He gets in behind defenders and gets to the byline. I think we're going to have a lot of joy from Brophy this season. And perhaps one criticism from yesterday is some of his crossing wasn't quite on point. So hopefully that improves over the season. But I think if you're going to play this defensive without the ball, quick attack, once you get the ball back sort of shape, I think Brophy's going to be involved in a lot of what we do this season. What do you reckon, gents? Impressed with Brophy so far?
Yeah, Brophy's the one, I think, of the new signings who I really like the look of when I got to see him sort of in the flesh against QPR. Just seems like a really... It's not great insight, but he's just like a really good footballer.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like
there's Tom's prediction, look.
Let me just quickly take that one off the Google Doc. No, I think he'll fit in quite well with Wes, and I could see them forming a pretty decent understanding as the season goes on. He also seems to be quite quick as well, which is, I didn't really see him as that type of player, but I guess if we needed to, then we could change his role within the team as well. So it's good that he's got that sort of versatility, or might have that sort of versatility. But yeah, I really like the look of Brophy. I think he'll be key to a lot of what we do. Again, the club obviously back him. I think they gave him a 3-year deal, so they'll obviously want him for our debut season in the Premier League as well as in League One. So we'll see how that goes.
I think he just fits both formations that we've started with in pre-season. And even if we switch to a 4-4-2, I think he fits in there as well. I think he is the most sort of nailed on starter other than, you know, Wes. And I think if he stays fit, I think he'll be one of our top appearance makers as well this season.
Yeah, I agree. I was just about to say, I've got a feeling he might be one of those that plays every minute, like I think Nora did last season. I think he's as you say, if he stays fit, and obviously it's a bit more demanding running up and down the left constantly, but I mean, well, it's not like Nora didn't do that last season. I think I saw at the end when we signed him, and I haven't fact checked this because this is UTAS, but I think I saw that for Orient last year, he, like one of the underlying data metrics, he created the most big chances in the final third from, or something like this, which I think Wes was second, but I don't know if anyone else saw that, but it was a pretty impressive stat for a team that finished, you know, around mid-table, and clearly they've spotted the potential in him. The rumor was, I think you mentioned this last week, he was going to go to Blackpool, right? So it's great that we got that bit of business done nice and early, and yeah, he helped to open the Grand Arcade shop, right? So he's clearly that's probably his biggest achievement in a Cambridge United shirt, and probably will be until, as Tom says, we get promoted to the Premier League. So yeah, no, very pleased with Bros. Very excited to see him play, actually. He seems really, really exciting.
Brilliant stuff. Right, let's turn to another guest prediction now. It's time for Mr. Doug Shulman.
Well, it's just a couple of hours after the final pre-season game, heading into next season. And, the U's pulled off a 0-0 draw with Northampton, which wasn't particularly inspiring. And I think the U's are still not entirely convincing heading into the season, but we all trust in Mark Bonner. And actually, I'm quite excited that I've been asked to contribute a few minutes to the Under the Abbey Stand pod, which is obviously a career highlight. Certainly made the decade worthwhile anyway. I've been asked to give one or two predictions. So I guess the big prediction is what's going to happen with United this season. I predict that they will perhaps start a little slowly in terms of making the transition to League One football. It will take, you know, the players that are not used to playing at that particular level a little while to get up to speed and just get used to the kind of tempo and the different style of football that they will perhaps not be used to, having played a lot of their football at League Two level or below. So it will take them a little while to get up to speed, but I think they'll be okay. It's all about surviving, really, isn't it? Just stay in the division, consolidate and go again next season. So just make sure you stay up. A couple of other sort of quirky predictions from me. One that I've noticed through pre-season, that Wes Houlihan has been growing his hair longer and longer. I saw this afternoon against Northampton, he had it set with a headband. I reckon by Christmas he might have a ponytail, you know, or a top knot. It seems silly to say it now, but that's my prediction, that he will either have a ponytail or a top knot. It's going to look daft, of course, but it'll be rather exciting to watch the progress of it. The other thing is that I think my esteemed and wonderful colleague in the press box, Mark Johnson, will say capricious breeze 39 times this season. It's a phrase he loves rolling out, and it's become an old favourite on the old Jono bingo front. If anyone wonders what capricious means, it's actually impulsive and unpredictable, hence the capricious breeze or the capricious wind. So there we go, 39 times, but there we go. Hope that will satisfy your prediction needs. We're all looking forward to this season, aren't we? We've got Portsmouth, Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday, Charlton, all the places that we haven't been to for some time. And it's going to be a roller coaster ride. Let's hope we enjoy it and we come out the back end of this season still in League One. Enjoy it, folks.
Thank you very much, Doug. Before we address the serious prediction of the slow start, I just want to shout out that I think it's such a compliment to Jack Swindlehurst that Wes Houlihan wants to grow his hair to look just like him. So, yeah, well done, Jack. Well done, mate. Doug is predicting a slow start for United, and I'm not 100% sure I agree with that one. And the reason I don't agree with it is I just don't think we can afford for it to happen. I know, obviously, Oxford on the first day is going to be a really tough start, but elsewhere over August, I'm looking at the likes of Plymouth and Burton and Accrington and Bolton, and I'm thinking we need to get points in those games. Got a couple of hard games in September with Lincoln and Portsmouth, end the month again with Fleetwood and Gillingham, teams that we should be looking to get points on. So I hope Doug's wrong, because I really see those first 2 months as an opportunity for us to get on the board and have something to build on. Tom, how confident are you for sort of points return over August and September and that start to the season?
Yeah, it feels like a lot of our on paper harder games do come later in the year. So if we want to stay up, I feel like it's, you know, we're kind of right into it basically. There's no let offs from, you know, kind of from the beginning. You know, you just look through them though, and like even like as you go into September, like it's Portsmouth, it's Lincoln, it's Doncaster, all, you know, it's all teams that, you know, Bolton even, who came up with us, they're all teams who, you know, will be expected to do fairly well this season. I think it's more just like the first sort of handful of games that we've got, I guess, you know, Accrington's, Plymouth's, Burton's. I'd like to think that we can get points off those teams. And they're probably the teams that we need to be targeting points from. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be like a really slow start. I mean, I don't know if Doug necessarily meant in terms of points returns or just sort of how we look on the pitch. But I feel like we should be reasonably confident of going into these games and be able to get something out of them. It's sort of later on in the year when you look at like our April, for example, and we're travelling to Wigan, we're travelling to Sunderland, we're travelling to Ipswich. That's when you look at those and you think, you don't really want to be going into those games with kind of too much to play for, unless obviously it's the other end of the table and things take turn other ways. But
let's stick with that, Tom, because your next prediction is that Mark Bonner won't still be in charge of Cambridge United by that point in the season, so we won't be here beyond March. Now, is that because he's going to do so well that he's going to be poached by someone? Or do you think it's because we'll have a slow start and the club will panic and look to bring someone else in?
Yeah, definitely not the latter. I definitely don't think that he would or should be sacked at any point this season, unless it's like literally like dramatically bad. But I just think that his stock is just going to continue to rise sort of throughout the season. And say we get to Christmas, or say we get to, you know, sort of the January sort of time, and, you know, we're doing okay, and we're, you know, not necessarily running away with the league, and, you know, we're not necessarily in the in contention for like a playoff space, but we are comfortable and we are looking like we can survive fairly easily. There's going to be clubs who are looking at him thinking, here's a young coach who's had 1.5, 2 seasons in management. One of them has resulted in a promotion, the other one's, you know, resulted in him keeping us at the level. And that's typically the time of the season where other clubs do panic and they do get rid of managers. So there's going to be vacancies that are coming up, and I'd be surprised if there's not a point in the season where there's serious links with him to go somewhere else. So yeah, that was, it's a negative prediction, I guess, but it's from like, from, it comes from positivity that I think we can do well enough in parts of the season that people will be interested to look at how it, you know, how we're doing it. And that's all ultimately going to be coming down to the manager. So yeah, that's a bit of a prediction. I think there's a lot of stuff that has to happen or has to not happen for that to actually go, you know, be proved correct. But yeah, it certainly wasn't meant in the way that we're just going to bin him the second we have a couple of bad results. That'd be ruthless.
I absolutely love it, mate. I love the positivity. I think there's obviously a lot of things to be worried about going into the season, you know, squad numbers, backup and so forth. But the one thing that does give me some positive energy going into the season is that Bonner just has this history and this form so far of making the team more than its sum of parts. And I feel like that is what is going to see us stay up if we do indeed stay up. And, you know, the way he prepares for each game, the way he sort of sets us up, I think there might be some people that underestimate us this season, and you know, maybe that will be the motivation to keep us up. And I think that leads in nicely to our final prediction for this part, which comes from the ray of positivity that is Julian Roberts. And you're gonna tackle the big question that everyone's thinking: is will Cambridge United stay up?
Yes. I've always been a ray of positivity, George. Yes, I think we will stay up, and I think we'll stay up on the last day of the season. I mean, it's not specifically the last day of the season per se, but I think it will go right down to the wire, is essentially what I mean. I don't think by a long shot, I mean, I hope we can smile at this if I am wrong. I don't think by a long shot we're going to be cast adrift by about January and be on about 12 points at Christmas and be completely out of it and gone, and, you know, it's all but done by March. And then Tom's prediction is correct as well, because Bonner gets the sack. No, I'm joking, but I have a feeling go right down to the last day, and there'll be a point needed in one of those final away games, like you say, Tom, and it'll be one of those days that we remember forever. And maybe it is right on the last day of the season, but I think it really will go down to the wire. And the reason I do think we'll stay up, and the reason there is a fair amount of, I think, positivity amongst United fans in the face of imminent relegation previews from all sorts of different sources, and you know, we started the show talking about them. I don't blame them objectively for looking at League One and looking at Cambridge United. We lost our top goal scorer last season, and arguably our best player, or definitely one of our best players, and our other best player will turn 40 this year. I understand why they think in such a strong division we will get relegated if you look at the facts, but data and those sorts of facts only tell you one half of the story. To see the other half of the story, you have to have been through a journey of watching 46 games last season and the ones at the end of the season before under Bonner to see how this side actually performs and the actual spirit in this side, like these unquantifiables, right? Like the way that Bonner can get a side up after a defeat last season, and just the spirit and unity amongst the squad, like signing on personality, as Tom mentioned earlier, these sorts of things, you can really see that you saw it in the promotion celebrations last season. And I have full faith that he'll have signed players on the same basis, and a big part of the reason they will have signed for us is because they want to be part of this squad. So I think that those little marginal gains that you can't are unquantifiable. I think that's where the difference will be for us, and that's where I have faith. It's essentially in Bonner. And to go back to those predictions, the thing I find a bit mad is people predicting Morecambe to finish above us. Like, I think, as Tom, like as we said, there is an element of people just trying to not make the obvious prediction, which is Morecambe to finish bottom. But they lost their manager as well. I mean, had we have lost Bonner this summer, I would be completely in agreement. But Bonner's our biggest asset, I would say. And he is the reason that I have faith that we will stay up. I think it will be a very, very close run thing because of the quality in the division. But I think he'll do it.
How dare people call this pod negative? Listening to that, that is the call to arms from Julian Roberts. Look, I'll follow that up, Julian, with a personal prediction. So nothing to do with the team. But if we stay up because of a last minute goal at Portman Road, I will do what the legends do at Portman Road in the away end, and that is sneak onto the roof, which apparently is a thing. I've seen it. If it happens, if West scores that 94th minute winner to keep us up, I'm on the roof. Tom, will you join me?
What a mate. All eyes on you then.
Do I point out now that I'm scared of heights and I will regret it instantly?
Yeah. The roof of a football stadium is arguably the worst place to be if you have a fear of heights. So
it's gonna put a real, real sour note on survival when Jordan Tom get arrested. Still after that,
please buy a fanzine because we have a bail to pay for.
Yeah, we've got very expensive lawyers to pay for to get out of a serious charge.
Tom, yeah. I'm gonna give you the last word for part two before we move into the third part where we look at Oxford and answer a couple of quick fire predictions. But any final thoughts based on what Julian just said there, mate?
Yeah. To be honest, I did like the positivity, but having been through what we went through last season, having things to play for on the last day, I couldn't help just think, fuck that. That sounds absolutely awful. I think it is going to be a close run thing. And I think an accepted narrative from quite a lot of our fans is that we're just significantly worse than the rest of the division. It doesn't tend to play out like that. Like, you can look through, you know, unless obviously teams sort of implode and have real sort of financial difficulties and their points deducted and that sort of thing. Like, it's probably, we can say for sure that we're going to go into some of those bigger games in April with something to play for. It's rare that teams are relegated as early as March. We'd have to do really, really badly for that to be the case. So I'm at least confident that that will happen. And even then, like, if we get relegated on, you know, the basis that we didn't manage to beat Sunderland at their ground when they're probably going for promotion as well, like, that's just what happens. Like, that's just football, unfortunately. Someone has to finish in the bottom four, and the fact that four teams get relegated as well, it does make it such a big challenge. But I don't think it's going to be like a car crash at all. I just think that for the rest of the division, we'll be seen as we should be winning this game, and I'd like to think that that's the exact conversations that they're having in the dressing room as well. I'd like to think that they're taking the predictions that other sort of broadcasters are making, other sort of media outlets are making about where we're going to finish and what we're going to do this season. And I hope there's, like, again, another football cliche, but I hope that that's blown up and stuck on the dressing room wall, basically. If you're a footballer and that doesn't motivate you, then what can? Try and prove people wrong. We weren't given a sniff last season either and we got promoted. We're not being given a sniff this season. And all we've got to do is be better than four other teams. Obviously, it's harder than that. Than obviously, you know, I make it sound. But, you know, if we can't be confident of finishing above the likes of Morecambe again this season, then, you know, we're kind of, you know, it's kind of done before it's even started, really. So I like to think that there's definitely going to be things to play for going into those games. I genuinely can't call it. I genuinely cannot call how it's gonna go and how it's going to turn out. I sort of had a bit of a feeling last year that if everything sort of came together as it did, then we might be in for a pretty special season. And that's obviously, unfortunately, what happened. But this year, I really can't tell. Like, there's so many aspects of the season that I'm just genuinely looking forward to without having any real understanding of how it's going to play out. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to, actually.
Well, get thinking, mate, because in part three, we're going to push you for the answers to that. Go on, Julian.
I just a final point on that. I also, there is a lot of teams that we don't need to be scared of in this division. For every Sunderland, there's a Fleetwood. For every Ipswich, there's like a Wimbledon. Do you know what I mean? There are some big teams in this league, but there are also some teams that we can definitely get points from. And if we go into them with the right attitude, like the psychological aspect of things, the best example from last season was Bolton away, where we pretty much lost the game in the tunnel. And it's a slightly different point, but you know, if you go to Hillsborough and as players, and it's tough because, you know, we're going to be a bit like, bloody hell, we're at Hillsborough, and it'll be tough as someone like Liam O'Neill. Well, I mean, that's harsh because he's played for big clubs, but you see my point, like to be in awe of such a big stadium and the occasion that you lose the game beforehand. And I think if we can get that psychological battle right, that'll be a massive step towards survival as well.
Brilliant. Join us in part three, where we're going to have a quick fire League One prediction, and also we're going to look at Oxford in a little more detail.
Hello, Max Rushton here. I've been requested to give my preview and hopes and dreams for the season, because presumably they still haven't found a contact number for Mark Saggers or one half of Groove Armada. So here's how I feel about it. I don't like the home kit. I love the away kit and the third kit. I was very excited when Wes Houlihan signed. In some ways, I'm not upset that Paul Mullen's gone to Wrexham, because I love the Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhenney project. I am nervous about us scoring goals. I suspect you've probably covered this in the pod. And, you know, you just hope that someone comes good in that department. I look at the league table with blind optimism and think we really could get into the playoffs. And why not? And there are some really fun games this season. And it will be nice to go, won't it? So all those things are positive. I believe in Mark Bonner. I have every faith. And whatever happens, it doesn't matter, because we'll still support them next season. Up the Ewes.
Right, welcome back, everyone. Part three of the 21-22 season preview. UTAS. It's a long one today, but hopefully you're all in agreement that it is all nothing but excellent insight and knowledge. We are going to do a quick fire round game of predictions. And I have decided that the order in which we answer these questions will be done alphabetically by surname, which puts Julian Roberts first. So no pressure, Julian.
Oh my God.
We're going to go round. Got a couple of questions. Just answers, no detailed explanation. Let's just hear what you say. So question one for you, Julian. Final position that the Ewes will finish in this season.
24th. No, I'm joking. 19th.
Tom, same question.
20th. We're going to just survive.
I'm going to go for 20th as well. Right, next question. Top goal scorer for United, and how many goals are they going to get? Julian.
Sam Smith, 12.
Tom.
Wes Houlihan, 12.
Oh, I'm going to go Joe Ironside, 14.
I'd love it if you'd have just gone Joe Ironside, 35.
player of the season, Julian.
Jones.
Tom.
Wes Houlihan.
Boring.
I'm going to go Brophy. Backed him so much this pod, I've jinxed it, haven't I?
Yeah.
Last question. Who is going to be the champion of League One in the 21-22 season? Julian, your prediction.
Quite boring, but I think Ipswich.
Tom, your prediction.
I think Ipswich as well.
To mix it up, I'm going to go for Rotherham.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. That's out there. My God. I mean, you've not mixed it up that much, have you?
listen to the top 20 pod and gone, yeah, they make a good point.
Yeah.
if you'd have said, like, I don't know, Sassuolo, that would have really mixed it up. A team that have been promoted for like the last three times they've been in League One, getting promoted from League One again.
I personally cannot believe the absolute sheer negativity of this podcast to not predict Cambridge United to be League One champions. I think it's a disgrace and we should all be looking at ourselves in the mirror.
I know it's not an Ipswich pod and we shouldn't talk about them too much, but I think a lot of our listeners are going to be looking forward to those games probably the most, home and away. Do you think they'll win the league, or do you think they've signed too many people? It's going to take a while for it to gel. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them. I just think they might choke. I think they might be like playoffs and then not do it.
No, I think they've probably got the best manager in the league in Cook, who's got a good track record of winning teams promotion. And I think they're putting together a pretty impressive squad as well. So I think they'll probably be the favourites or joint favourites probably with Sunderland. And I think that's probably about right.
George, can I add a question? Very quick, a quick fire question.
Is that the question?
Yeah. No, the question is, what away game are you looking forward to the most?
If we're allowed in, Charlton away, because it's Tom's birthday.
Yeah.
And he's going to dress up. He said he'll dress up for his birthday as Santa.
I didn't say that. it's not my actual birthday. I've got Cheltenham away, but I think Charlton's the one to make the most of, isn't it? Not Cheltenham on a Tuesday night. Yeah, I'll probably say Charlton as well. I mean, that's a proper day out, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Because like obviously Hillsborough is like the obvious one, or Stadium Light, because of like the Prem Association and the big stadium. But Charlton is like a London away day, so think of all the fun of sort of getting there quite easily and being able to sort of, yeah, like go to pubs and stuff beforehand. So yeah, I think Charlton just edges it for me. Unless of course we are already safe when we go to Sunderland away, because that has the potential to be massive. If they're chasing promotion or the title, that could be like a big attendance.
Yeah, I think for the same reason, I'm going to say Ipswich just to be a bit different, but I will throw in an outsider that I think Wigan is going to be absolutely quality. A lot of different reasons.
Good Friday as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that'll be a day out.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. It's all starting in a week, boys. I can't wait.
El Vino did flow.
Right. Talking of away days, Oxford have their favourite one of the season on day one when they visit the Abbey Stadium. Off air, Tom Walker said, let me do the Oxford preview because I know everything about Oxford. So, Tom, you're up, mate. Walk us through next Saturday.
What is this part three? This is a personal assault. I'm getting absolutely stitched up here. I know a little bit about Oxford. I know they've got a good university. Huh? Who else has got that?
Right.
Yeah, us, that's right.
The varsity derby.
No, they're obviously a team that's going to be tipped to do quite well this year, I think. Been in the playoffs for the last 2 years. They'll probably want to be there again this year, I would think. I think their summer business has been pretty good as well, though. Yesterday, I think it was, they brought Gavin White back, who played for them a couple of years ago and got a move to Cardiff. I think it was fairly big money involved as well. So he's already one to watch out for as probably someone who's going to cause us a lot of problems. They brought back a guy called Nathan Holland from West Ham on loan, who I think was there last season and did pretty well for them. Steve Seddon, who I think has done well at this level before for Wimbledon, I think he was there. Billy Bowden, who we'll all know about when he was playing for Bristol Rovers. He did really well for them in League One. So they've signed a lot of players with really good experience of having been there and done it at League One level. The manager, Carl Robinson, I know there's a lot of people who maybe don't like the cut of his jib, but he's clearly a good manager at this level. He's got teams promoted from this league before. He's managed to turn Oxford into pretty much a promotion chasing team for the whole time that he's been there. So they're one that it's a really tough test for an opening day. And I think if we can get something out of that game, then that'll be a real credit to us, because they're going to be a team that I think it will be really difficult for a lot of, they're going to create a lot of chances. And you think they've got the quality there to finish it off. They've got Matt Taylor up front as well, who played for Bristol Rovers as well before. At this level, he's someone who, if there's such thing as a guarantee of 20 or 25 goals, he's as close to it as you probably possibly get. So, a really stern test and one that I hope that they're up for and hope that we can take something out of it.
Julian, you have this theory about them being slow starters. Does that make you confident about Saturday and getting anything?
Yeah, I think we'll pop them 5-0, to be honest. I think we'll absolutely fly through them. again, Tom might know more about this than me. I was listening to a preview and they mentioned that they're notoriously slow starting seasons, but they finish seasons incredibly well. So maybe that plays in our favour, that a home game was always going to be a good place to start with a full crowd in. Hopefully it's close to selling out. I would hope so. Be interesting to see what the attendances are like actually for the first few games, with, you know, people various opinions on COVID precautions and everything like that. Let's not go into that. I've got a pretty good feeling about it, to be honest. As I say, it's just got that. I can't help but compare it to the Plymouth game, which the first game back in the league, and here's to the same result.
Joshy Coulson running on and just snatching a winner for us right at the end.
Arrested for getting on the pitch.
I'm gonna be the party pooper. I think Saturday is gonna be not a rude awakening, not like getting a sort of a 4-5-0 smashing by Oxford, but I think it will be an awakening of the level that we're gonna be coming up against this season. And I think we might fall behind to sort of like a 2-0 sort of deficit, and then, you know, maybe get one back or maybe concede a third as we try to push for an equaliser. So I think it will be a learning curve, but I think it might not be the magical day that we're hoping for. So sorry for saying that.
What a note to end the pod on. It's fantastic. Everyone get down to the Abbey.
Yeah, and on that, we'll speak again on the other side of the Oxford game. So thank you very much for listening to the preview. Tom, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me back. Let's get into them.
Julian, good to see you, mate.
Here we go, mate. See you soon.